Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Thursday, September 7th, 2017. So glad you've allowed us to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. We've got a great show coming right at you. Not only do we have one guest, but we have two guests that will be joining us throughout the hour. On today's Current Sports, we'll invite Richard Kincaid to the show. Detroit sports broadcaster Richard will put a bow on the season that has been for the Detroit Tigers as they were mathematically eliminated. Not that any of us had hope that they would make a rally and, of course, win the AL Central, right? I mean, come on, that's been in the dirt now for a while. But Richard will talk about what has gone wrong for the Detroit Tigers throughout this entire year and whether or not the Detroit Tigers should bring back manager Brad Ausmus. That and more. We'll chat with Richard also with MSU football. You don't want to miss that. And we will also talk to Kelly Dean on the final segment of today's Current Sports. He is the president and CEO of Dean Transportation. He has partnered up with a lot of local affiliates here in the Lansing area that will be providing help down to those affected by Hurricane Harvey. So Kelly Dean will talk about how you can get involved with those efforts. You don't want to miss that. We'll also talk about the start of the NFL season. How about that? Tonight is the night that the NFL returns back to our sports lives. I can't wait for it. You got the New England Patriots taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, the Pats, the defending Super Bowl champions, led by former U of M quarterback Tom Brady, who I believe is the greatest quarterback of all time. We'll preview the NFL year, and of course, we'll talk about the Honolulu Blue and the Detroit Lions. All of that and so much more, and of course, it is Throwback Thursday. Each and every Thursday, we hop into our Current Sports time machine to take a look at a few historic events that have occurred on this particular Thursday. If you want to be a part of the show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports, where we always have our Current Sports live stream up and running, and even tweet us at WKAR_sports or at my Twitter handle at Al Martin WKAR. But hey, you know what's next? Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. We start with news concerning late Michigan State men's basketball coach Judd Heathcote. the Michigan State Athletic Department will pay tribute to former MSU men's basketball coach Judd Heathcote in multiple ways in the near future and throughout the 2017-18 season. Now, the men's basketball team will wear a patch honoring Heathcote throughout the upcoming year. The final design of the patch will be revealed at a later date. The Michigan State and Purdue men's basketball game on February 10th at the Breslin will be the Judd Heathcote tribute game. Now, the date coincides with the annual former player reunion, which will allow many of Coach Heathcote's former players to be in attendance. Heathcote was recognized with a moment of silence before the Michigan State football season opener against Bowling Green at Spartan Stadium on Saturday afternoon. Heathcote passed away on August 28th at the age of 90. All right, due to the impact of Hurricane Irma, the active ankle challenge hosted by number 2 Florida has been reduced to a lone head-to-head match against number 21 Michigan State. Now, the two teams will face off Friday, September 8th at 5 p.m. in Ezactec Arena and the Stephen C. O'Connell Center. The two teams are meeting for the second straight season. The preview of the match can be found on Michigan State's website. Originally scheduled to be a 4-team and 2-day event, only Michigan State will journey to Gainesville. The Spartans will return to East Lansing on Friday evening following the match. Hurricane Irma, be safe. If you have any family and friends out there, our thoughts and prayers go out to those individuals. I actually have my mother, stepfather, as well as my my little sister that live out in the Miami area. They are evacuating as we speak. Man, crazy world we're living in right now. All right, the Michigan State women's soccer team has a rare single game this week, and all focus is on the number 17 Wake Forest Demon Deacons. Michigan State will host the first ever meeting between the Spartans and Wake Forest tonight at 7 p.m. at DeMartin Stadium. Current Sports will be there. You can catch highlights of that matchup later on via Facebook.com/Current Sports. The Spartans have won their last three matches, including two road contests. Michigan State defeated Samford 3-2 in Birmingham, Alabama on August 27th to start the streak. The squad got their second victory against Bowling Green 2-1 in Bowling Green, Ohio on September 1st. The third win came from a 1-0 shutout against Oakland on September 3rd at home. Michigan State has accumulated a 3-game win streak for the first time since 2014. Alex Gordon's go-ahead RBI double fueled a 4-run seventh inning, rewarding Jason Hamill for 6 quality innings as the Kansas City Royals pulled away for a 13-2 win over the Tigers in the rubber match of a 3-game series Wednesday night at Comerica Park. Now, after an off day today, the Tigers will head north to Toronto to open a 3-game series against the Blue Jays with a 7:07 p.m. game on Friday at Rogers Center. Now, Buck Farmer, who is 3-2 on the year with a 7.18 ERA, he will get the start in his third turn since rejoining the Detroit rotation 2 weeks ago. And tonight, folks, you have been waiting on this, the start of the NFL season. Can you believe that it's already here? I really can't. I really, really can't, folks. But hey, NFL kicks off tonight with one game. The Kansas City Chiefs will play the New England Patriots. I should rephrase that. The defending Super Bowl champion, New England Patriots. At 8:30 p.m., you can catch that game on NBC. And, of course, on Sunday is when everyone else will play, including your Detroit Lions, who will host the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday at 1 p.m. We'll talk more NFL in just a moment. The commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, issued a statement in support for Michael Bennett late on Wednesday. And in his statement, there's a distinct echo of the most vilified man in his league. The sports world was rattled on Wednesday as Bennett, one of the more respected players in the game, he wrote a frightening social media post about being driven to the ground by police in Las Vegas after gunshots were heard on the night of the Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor fight. The Seahawks star insisted that he was singled out for the color of his skin and threatened with a gun. We'll have more on that story in just a moment. And it's been over a decade since the last time an American woman, other than Serena Williams, won a Grand Slam tournament. But that streak will end this week. For the first time in over 30 years, the U.S. Open semis will feature four American players, setting up what could be one of the most memorable finishes in the event's history. World number 9, Venus Williams, the sister of Serena, and also the last non-Serena American to take a Grand Slam. She is the main fan draw out of the remaining group. This is her 24th year as a pro, a lifetime in WTA years, but the 7-time major champ has made an incredible return to form over the past few seasons, reaching 6 Grand Slam semifinals since the start of 2015. And Juan Martin Del Potro, who stunned Roger Federer in 5 sets in the 2009 U.S. Open final for his only major title, he took the rematch as well, winning 7-5, 3-6, 7-6 on Wednesday night at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Flushing, New York. How about that? Now, Del Potro, he's seeded 24th, reaches his first major semifinal since 2013 at Wimbledon. He will face number 1, Rafael Nadal, who keeps the top spot with Federer's loss next, while the other semifinal pits number 12 seeded Pablo Carreño Busta of Spain against number 28 Kevin Anderson of South Africa. Now, in their long and storied careers, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal have never played against each other in the U.S. Open. That's quite surprising. And it won't happen this year either. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
Obviously, I would hate to be up here through these circumstances and happen to be up here talking about it. It's a traumatic experience for me, my family. And it sucks that the country that we live in now, sometimes you get profiled for the color of your skin. And it's a tough situation for me. Do I think every police officer is bad? No, I don't believe that. Do I believe there's some people out there that judge people on the color of their skin? I do believe that, and I'm just focused on trying to push forward, champion the quest for justice for people, keep pushing equality for oppressed people, and that's what I'm about, and what I keep doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it gets emotional when you think about it, like overall, but yeah, like sometimes like a hug is the best thing you can give, and it's just. I mean, I don't really know, really, you know what I'm saying? I don't really have the answers, so. You just think, what if, you know? 2 seconds this way, 2 seconds that way, the whole thing is different, so. So for me, it's just, I'm just be happy to see my brother, because there's a chance that I couldn't see him.
Thank you. Dear World, on Saturday, August 26, 2017, I was in Las Vegas to attend the Mayweather-McGregor fight on my day off. After the fight, while heading back to my hotel, several hundred people heard what sounded like gunshots. Like many of the people in my area, I ran away from the sound, looking for safety. Las Vegas police officers singled me out and pointed their guns at me for doing nothing more than simply being a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time. A officer ordered me to get on the ground. As I laid on the ground, complying with his commands not to move, he placed his gun near my head and warned me that if I move, he would, quote, blow my bleeping head off, end quote. Terrified and confused by what was taking place, a second officer came over and forcefully jammed his knee into my back, making it difficult for me to breathe. He then clenched the handcuffs on my wrist so tight that my fingers went numb. The officer's excessive use of force was unbearable. I felt helpless as I lay there on the ground, handcuffed, facing the real-life threat of being killed. All I could think of was, I'm going to die for no other reason that I'm black and my skin color is somewhat of a threat. My life flashed before my eyes and I thought of my girls. Would I ever play with them again? Or watch them have kids? Or be able to kiss my wife again and tell her I love her? I kept asking the officers, what did I do? And reminding them that I had rights. They were deputy bound and duty bound to respect. The officers ignored my pleas and instead told me to shut up and then took me to the back of a nearby police car where I sat for what felt like an eternity until they apparently realized I was not a thug, common criminal, or ordinary black man, but Michael Bennett, a famous professional football player. After confirming my identity, I was ultimately released without any legitimate justification for the officer's abuse of conduct. I've always held a strong conviction that protesting or standing up for justice is just simply the right thing to do. This fact is unequivocally, without question, why before every game I sit during the national anthem. Because equality doesn't live in this country. And no matter how much money you make, what job title you have, or how much you give, when you are seen as a blank, you will be treated that way. The system failed me. I can only imagine what Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, and Carlina Lyles felt. I have retained Oakland civil rights attorney John Burris to investigate and explore all my legal options, including filing a civil rights lawsuit for the violation of my constitutional rights. Sincerely, Michael Bennett. That is how we start today's Current Sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. And I just wanted to address the breaking news that we saw via TMZ Sports concerning NFL football player Michael Bennett, who has been a longtime staple of the Seattle Seahawks NFL organization. Bennett sending out a tweet at 10 a.m. yesterday. That tweet encompassing that message that I just read here on the airwaves. After the Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather fight right outside of the club Dreas, Bennett was allegedly racially profiled by the police, the Las Vegas police. And, you know, I couldn't help but think that, man, you know, this is just another story, yet another story where we are talking about a black man in America being unjustly racially profiled by cops. And a few thoughts came to mind. Again, anytime I hear of a story like this, it hurts. My spirit is certainly moved because this could have been me. You know, and if I had a son, a young son, I always think about that. If I had a son, you know, what would I tell him? Living in America and seeing constant stories like this. Being a black man in America, as it pertains to law enforcement in 2017. Now, don't get me wrong. There are more good cops than bad out there. And those who are doing a remarkable job at serving and protecting. But far too often do we see stories like that of Michael Bennett. And heck, I was just in Vegas. I mean, this summer, I took a trip to Vegas for my fraternity brother's bachelor party, and I actually attended Dreas. And I remember walking out of Dreas. We had a great time. And I just can't help but imagine, you know, if that had been myself or one of my fraternity brothers during that time. I mean, my goodness. So you heard a bite from Michael Bennett as he took the podium, as well as an emotional brother in Martellus Bennett, who is, of course, a football player for the Green Bay Packers. He choked up. He was asked about the situation concerning his brother Michael, you know, and the aftermath of what happened out in Las Vegas after the Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather fight, and he just choked up, you know. He broke down crying, thinking about what could have happened, what could have been. A few seconds here, a few seconds there, and it could have been really bad. So I say that just to say all of those out there who are standing up for inequality here in America, keep doing what you're doing. Because this is a conversation that needs to be had. It's a conversation that is only going to be had if those out there keep standing up, letting your voice be heard, continue to protest. Do it again. Do it safely, though. No violence. Nonviolent protesting. Letting your voice be heard here in America. That's what the Constitution allows you to do. Keep doing it. And we have some outstanding groups here at Michigan State University, groups that I was once a part of as a student in college, Black Student Alliance, my fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha, Fraternity Incorporated, are constantly holding nonviolent protest just to let it be known that we will not stand for inequality here in our nation. And that took a lot of courage for Michael Bennett to share that story. So props to you, man. Really unfortunate stuff. All right, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. On a much, much lighter note, the NFL season begins tonight. I cannot wait. I've drafted. I'm only in one. Isaac Constance, engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. I'm only in one fantasy football league. You know what we may have to do after the show today? I'm going to set up something for, you know, our Current Sports listeners and Current Sports viewers out there. We'll put together a league. Now, again, I know it's the day of, right? It's the day of, you know, when it comes to the start of the NFL season. But immediately after the show, we're going to set up something on our Current Sports Facebook page for you guys to join and compete against Isaac and myself. And again, it should be pretty fun. We may have something for the winner at the end of the NFL season. But I'm only in one fantasy football league, and it's a bit odd. Because actually a lot of my homies out there are actually protesting the NFL due to the whole Colin Kaepernick situation. You know where I lie on that. I'm not going that far as to protest the NFL. Okay. This is a league that employs 70 that this is a league that encompasses 70%. It's 70% African-American, 70% African-American. I think we're kind of going too far to pro. I mean, cause at the end of the day, people are still going to watch. I don't think that would do anything to hurt the NFL. But regardless of that, I'm surprised I'm only in one fantasy football league, dude. We'll make it two after today's show.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear you say that because I was planning on doing one last night. As you know, though, it was the start of classes last week, and right. My routine is always, you know, I take a lot of credits. I buckle in at the start of the semester. I do all the readings and whatnot, and then, sorry, teachers, I gotta figure you out a little bit and try to start weaning myself off of the readings a little bit so that I can actually focus on more fun things to do. But I've been booked up to my head in that and have not had the chance to draft or research a fantasy football team. So come tonight. May the Lord be with me, because I'm going to need some help right there.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure, man. But, you know, I want to dive briefly into the start of the year for the Detroit Lions. You know, this is the team that everybody cares about here in Michigan, right? Because the Lions are your team, the Honolulu Blue, right? And they will open up the year against the Arizona Cardinals come this Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. You know, there's a lot of buzz surrounding around the Lions. I think more so because of what now is a very big spotlight on the back of Mr. Matthew Stafford, who just recently signed the biggest contract in the NFL. And, you know, you look at this Detroit Lions team, you know, and I'm kind of kicking. I kicked around a lot of predictions this morning, you know, a lot of thoughts, just looking at the schedule for the Detroit Lions and trying to kind of dissect where do I see them in the NFL picture. You know, this is Jim Caldwell's squad for yet another year, looking to make the postseason for the third time in 4 years. And if they do make the postseason this year, it will be the first time since 94-95 that the Lions actually made back-to-back playoff appearances. Now, you look at the schedule for the Detroit Lions, you know, there's only one stretch of back-to-back road games, which comes at a pretty manageable portion of the December schedule. However, you know, you look at, for me, just to lay it out there, I'll just throw it out there right now, Isaac. I see the Lions going 9-7 this year. If I had to go through the losses for the Lions, the seven losses I see week two at the Giants. Now, again, when it comes to the New York football Giants, who actually play my other team, the Dallas Cowboys, respect the star. Odell Beckham Jr., he's listed as questionable for this weekend. He got hurt in the preseason due to that ankle sprain. It's, you know, I saw a press conference with Odell this morning, and Odell is still kind of, you know, he's putting it out there that, you know what, I'm trying to work out this ankle. There's a possibility, you know, it's gonna really irk me if I cannot get out there on the field, especially against the Dallas Cowboys, right? I mean, that's a rivalry there. So I am concerned about the health of Odell Beckham Jr. But let's just say he does sit out, you know, this week one against the Dallas Cowboys. Week two, making his return against the Detroit Lions, that could spell bad news for the Lions. So I'm going with the Lions to lose week two against the Giants. Week three against the Atlanta Falcons. Week four against the Minnesota Vikings. I said it's going to be a rocky start. We had this discussion earlier this week and late last week. It's going to be a rocky start for the Detroit Lions, but I still believe they will find a way to pull out 9 wins this year, which isn't great, I must say. I mean, 9 wins, it's not like you're blowing anybody out the water, right, with that kind of a record. However, I think it'd be enough to get them at least a wild card bid. But week four, loss against the Vikings. Week nine, so I think they'll go on a bit of a winning stretch there. Week nine against the Green Bay Packers, this is a loss. Week 13 against the Baltimore Ravens. Week 14 at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then week 17, they go 0-2 against the Green Bay Packers. Week 17, they will close out the year against Aaron Rodgers and company. Looking at the schedule, Isaac, again, especially that middle part of the schedule, that stretches from week 4 to week 9, I see the Lions possibly getting into a groove here. I see 9-7 for this team, though. What do you think?
You think 2-9 in terms of the weeks is an easy part? Because I thought, looking at the schedule, just a cursory glance over it, I thought that's almost exactly the opposite of last year. The Lions started off last year so well. There was talk about, you know, a top seed in the playoffs, whatnot. Then I think it heated up to the point where the Lions just couldn't sustain that success. Instead, this year, they've got quite an easy road, in my opinion, going from week 10 down for the rest of the season. That goes Cleveland, Chicago, Minnesota, Baltimore, Tampa Bay, Chicago, Cincinnati, Green Bay.
That's what I mean. That's
winnable.
That's what I said. It's a manageable portion in December that I think the Lions can get on a bit of a roll to close out the year. But again, that week after week four, because I think they're losing to the Minnesota Vikings, but after week four, you know, to week nine, I really believe that the Detroit Lions can possibly get something going there. But who knows? Again, predictions when it comes to the NFL are left and right. Who knows? But I do believe that this Lions team has some talent on it offensively that can get them to win ball games in late stretches of games, in the fourth quarter. It's going to be, like you said, it's going to be kind of similar to last year. We saw the Lions, you know, have all these fourth quarter comebacks courtesy of Mr. Matthew Stafford. The big question mark for me, and I'll keep stating it, is that Detroit Lions defense. That secondary has to stop somebody. But for me, again, looking at the schedule, again, they'll start against, you know, the Cardinals, Giants, Falcons, Vikings, and then you even have to play, you know, the Carolina Panthers, which will be a tough game. That's going to be to start the year. You can see the Lions possibly only pulling out maybe two wins out of that stretch of football. After that, they will play the Pittsburgh Steelers. The health of Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell. That's in question. You know what I mean? Le'Veon Bell, I think, is going to still can be a consistent force if he stays healthy going into that game on October 29th. But then you play, again, I said a loss to the Green Bay Packers, but you play the Browns. Again, as you mentioned, Isaac, the Browns, the Bears. I see them losing to the Vikings in a very competitive game, though. The Ravens, Bucks, Bears, and then the Bengals and Packers to close out the year. I think this is a schedule in which the Lions can get on a bit of a roll.
It is.
At least two times throughout the season.
And that's the thing. There's potential for momentum here for the Detroit Lions. I've got them going 8-8 this year. And I think they get off, like you, to a relatively slow start. And by that, I mean first eight games, you're winning two or three of them. I think it can be really that ugly for Detroit because it is not an easy schedule. I mean, you are going against offenses who can tear that defense apart. Carolina, New Orleans, teams that you probably should beat, have revamped defenses in a way the Lions don't. I mean, those teams still have offensive firepower. Those aren't gimmicks. And, of course, those teams themselves are not as good as Atlanta or Arizona, who you're playing on the front end of the season. Pittsburgh's winnable, especially with that game at home, that game being in week eight. But
you know, it's going to come down to that run game for the Lions for me.
The end of the season, though. You're right. It's about finishing off strong. And you're right. Can Matthew Stafford get some help from the run game? Because if he can't, then guess what? Passing is only sustainable for so long throughout a season until teams figure you out.
They have to have a run game. Simple as that. Matthew Stafford is going to do what Matthew Stafford does. I think this is the second best quarterback in Detroit Lions franchise history, right behind Bobby Lane. That's not saying much, though. It's the Detroit Lions we're talking about. But Matthew Stafford, he just signed the biggest contract in the NFL right now. And he needs the luxury of having, though, if things aren't clicking with his receivers, he needs the luxury of having a run game to lean on. They got to stay healthy. Ameer Abdullah, I'm looking for Ameer Abdullah to have a big season. I really think if he stays healthy, Ameer Abdullah can turn a lot of heads. Due to time, we got to hit our first break right now. When we come back, again, we'll take some of your calls. I know Kurt from Grand Ledge is on. We've got Tom from Lansing also on. Stay there. We'll get to those calls. We'll also welcome Richard Kincaid to the show, Detroit sports broadcaster. We'll talk some Tigers with him. And we still have Kelly Dean, president and CEO of Dean Transportation, to get to as well later on this hour. That and more, a loaded 30 minutes coming up. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. The NFL season begins tonight. You can catch Tom Brady, the GOAT, and, of course, the defending Super Bowl champion, Detroit. Almost said Detroit Lions. I wish. Oh, put that in the blooper reel, Isaac. That's a huge blooper reel right there, man. Yeah, thank you, Isaac. The New England Patriots are your defending Super Bowl champions. They will be taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm getting some reaction via Facebook.com/currentsports here. Ben Grimes says, I can see 9 wins for the Lions this season, but we are not losing to the Vikings. That's a joke. Okay, Ben, I hear you. Eric McLeod, I'm not confident about the Lions this season. Are we ever, though? I tell you that. For the average Detroit Lions fan is never confident about this team heading into a new year. But, hey, it's a new year. Donut and donut is your record. We'll see what the Lions can do. Maybe they can if they make the playoffs too, that's history. The first time, back-to-back playoff appearances for the first time since 94-95, that will be big. I want to start, I want to get just two more reactions from our listeners right now before we get to our first guest. Line one, due to time, we only got a minute per caller. So line one, Tom from Lansing wants to weigh in on the Michael Bennett situation. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Very well. What's on your mind?
You made a comment about the that Michael Beckton situation He said that there's probably more good cops than bad cops.
There are more good cops than bad cops.
And my question to you is this. If the good cops cover up for the bad cops, are they still good? Because, you know, they have that blue wall. They can see other cops doing things that might not be right. But when it comes time to fess up, it's they don't. They protect each other. And I'm wondering where that line is, if it's starting to blur, especially when you consider that our soldiers, our U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan, they have to treat those civilians better than the police treat American citizens here in America. They couldn't get away with the kind of stuff the police do to Americans. So I just wanted to add that in as a thought for consideration. And I'll take your response off here.
Thank you, Tom. I think that's an interesting comment on many psychological levels, Isaac. I think that if any cop out there sees something that is wrong when it comes to his fellow coworkers and decides to stay silent about it and decides not to stand up for something that's wrong, that cop is in the wrong as well. You know what I mean? I mean, come on. As police officers, your job is to protect and serve. If you see something wrong within your organization and, of course, outside of it, you got to speak up and do what's right. So that cop is also in the wrong. Tom, thank you for weighing in on that. Really appreciate it. And again, our next caller, really quickly due to time, we've got our dear friend Kirk from Grand Ledge who wants to talk MSU football and Mr. Tom Brady. Kirk, how you doing?
Not too bad, Al. I actually would like at some point in time, and maybe we could take this up differently, but you in the Michael Bennett piece, you said, what would you say to your son if you had a son? And my question that I would love to hear at some point to try and understand it is, what were you told as a young man, you know, by your grandfather, who I know was a big part of your life, by other African-American males? What were you told as a young man on how to deal with racism?
Right.
Now, going to the trivial stuff in relationship to that issue, the Michigan State football thing, the one thing I learned from last Saturday's game was that Brian Lewerke can tackle better than Damian Terry, because on both of L.J. Scott's fumbles, the quarterbacks had to make a touchdown-saving tackle. Lewerke did, and Terry didn't. So, I mean, you know, that's
right.
That's goofy. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, you know, you're saying Tom Brady is the GOAT.
He's the GOAT.
He was in 7 Super Bowls. He's 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In 2 of those Super Bowls, the one last year and the one against Seattle, New England won because of extremely stupid coaching decisions. If Seattle runs Marshawn Lynch into the end zone and Seattle wins, and if Atlanta last year, after Julio Jones' great catch, runs the ball 3 times and kicks a field goal and makes it impossible for him to come back, he's then 3-4. Is he still the GOAT?
Still the GOAT. Still the GOAT, in my opinion. When you look at, because again, stats don't tell everything, Kirk. You know, I understand those plays. If they pan out in different ways, Tom Brady's record could not. It wouldn't be what 5 Super Bowl wins,
yeah.
Right, Isaac? But at the same time, I mean, just looking at Tom Brady and looking at what he's done throughout his career, it's the eye test, Kirk. When I look at Tom Brady, Tom, from top to bottom, what he does as a quarterback, I've never seen any other quarterback do.
Well, what Brady did last year, too. He had 460-odd passing yards. He led that fourth quarter comeback. He captained
it,
had records set for both completions and yards. I mean, I would say that he won it because of a stupid coaching decision. It definitely played into it. But at the same time, it's like saying Steve Kerr won the Bulls the finals, like Ray Allen won the Heat the finals. I think Tom Brady still won that Super Bowl.
Here's
my thing. Anytime we do a greatest of all time thing, when you look at the NFL and you look at Tom Brady and you compare him to somebody like Johnny Unitas, who played in an era when offensive linemen couldn't use their hands to block, defensive linemen could use a head slap to get to the quarterback, defensive backs could, provided the ball wasn't in the air,
right,
have as much contact as you want.
I hear you, Kirk.
Okay? It's really difficult to compare across those different kinds of scenarios and imagine what Tom Brady would do with those kinds of things where legalized and everything else.
The accolades, the stats, the rings, no one comes close in my estimation when having this discussion who is the greatest quarterback of all time. And also the fact that Tom has done it with a receiving core that usually hasn't been the top receiving core in the league. I mean, he's made lemonade out of a lot of lemons throughout his career. But, Kurt, we got to go do the time. We got to get to our first guest. Thank you, man. All right, let's get to Richard Kincaid right now, Detroit sports broadcaster. I want to talk Detroit Tigers with Rich, as well as a little bit of MSU football with him. Rich, thank you for patiently waiting. How you doing, my man?
Well, until you brought up the Tigers, I was doing pretty well.
until I said that, right?
man, what a mess.
It has been an absolute mess. And you know what? I saw something today in the paper that talked about how mathematically the Detroit Tigers were eliminated with that loss, that blowout loss last night. They have been mathematically eliminated from the AL Central race. We all knew, though, just looking at this team, it's been an absolute catastrophe. It was weird watching Justin Verlander have the stout outing that he had with the Houston Astros a few days ago. Cameron Maben, another former Tiger, helping him out, you know, in getting that win. I mean, just first off, Rich, what do you make of what has gone wrong this year with the Detroit Tigers organization?
Well, the same thing, really. I think they've just overvalued their talent just a little bit, and they just haven't. They're not getting the kind of production, certainly from Victor Martinez, who of course is done for the year with his heart rhythm issue. But they haven't gotten production from him. They haven't gotten production this year from Corbera. I just remember a lot of nights looking up at that big scoreboard in left field at Comerica Park, and they have the batting order listed there, and you go down the list, and it's like nobody's hitting over 250, 255, 260 on this team.
Right.
So they're not hitting. And then the other thing is the broken records playing for, you know, half a dozen years. If they get starting pitching, they don't get relief pitching. And they haven't gotten very much relief pitching. And this has been ongoing. So I don't know. You sort of felt iffy going into the season when you hear these things out that the Tigers were looking to perhaps be sellers at the trade deadline if things weren't going well by the early part of July. And you're thinking that's not really the kind of, you know, optimistic we're going to take this division kind of an approach that you'd like to see. So it's been troubling from the get-go. And I think we're in for here is, frankly, a few seasons of misery as they retool this ball club. They've got to get less expensive for one thing. So you're gonna, but you know they've dumped a lot of salary now, even if they are paying $8 million of Justin Verlander's $22 million deal. But yeah, that's I see Jordan Zimmerman making over $20 million a year.
Right,
it just drives you nuts.
It does. And, you know, they're married to Miggy's contract for another 5 years at $30 million a season.
Exactly.
And, you know, you look at this entire situation, and, you know, I feel like I'm just waiting for the day where I look at my phone and I get that update that Brad Ausmus has been let go as the Detroit Tigers manager. However, you know, Al Avila, 4 or 5 days ago, Rich, you know, he said that Brad could return as manager for the Tigers. What do you make of that, and do you think that Brad Ausmus will last at least another season?
I don't think he's in what we would call a survivable situation here, simply because the public outrage, I think, would be overwhelming were he to stay. I don't like, calling for a guy to be fired, but I've just not been. I should stop saying frankly at this point. I'd like people to think everything I say is frank. I just don't think he's quite done the job that they thought he would when he hired him. He was too green. He didn't have any experience at all managing the minors anywhere else for that matter. And it's just difficult to, no matter what your experience is as a player, and he sort of had a lot of that, to have not had any managerial experience at all and then just jump in at the major league level. It's tough. And he's been learning on the job for these past four seasons. But I just think that, time and patience are eventually going to tell the story in this case.
Rich, how long do you think it will take for this Detroit Tigers team to retool, develop its prospects, which they didn't have much of? They're trying to, acquire more talent when it comes to their farm system, when it comes to the latest trades they've made. But how long do you think it will take for this rebuild process to happen and the Detroit Tigers to be in the World Series conversation once again?
5 years is what I'm thinking.
5 years.
But at the same time, look at how bad the New York Yankees were a year ago.
Right.
And they, in all likelihood, are going to make the playoffs. At least that wild card one-game playoff deal that they've got going in Major League Baseball. But, yeah, they'll likely be in the postseason this year. But do the Tigers have an Aaron Judge, down at Toledo? I don't think they do.
No.
And you're talking about pretty much a total rebuild of the pitching staff. And I don't see a lot of good prospects in the system right now. So that's the major thing. It always is in baseball, is pitching, and just to rebuild that staff. Unless there's something unforeseen, a big free agent signing, that sort of thing. I think it's going to take a considerable amount of time. I think we're in for a little bit of pain here for the next few seasons. And, you hate to see it because you're down at the ballpark and it's just dead these days.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. I was watching some of the games the past few days, and I look in the stands and there's like nobody there. I mean, quite the contrast from the start of the season for sure, Rich.
Oh, no question. And you'd expect, I looked out there last night. I'm thinking there might be 6,000-7,000 people there.
Wow.
And it just, you could go back a long time and be used to it, but you'd be talking about, the early 2000s, the last time, you saw a stadium that empty while, a major league game was being played in it here in Detroit. There's really nothing. Nothing very good to say about it. I saw something just a few minutes ago. The LA Dodgers, as you know, they've dropped 11 of their last 12, and
right.
Their lead in the West on August 25th. Their lead in the West in the NL West is 21.5 games. It's down now to 10.5 over Arizona, which has won 13 in a row, and six of those wins have come against the Dodgers. And the Dodgers manager Davey Roberts says, "We're going to win the division. I assure you of that." And he may well be right. He's got a 10.5 game lead with 23 to play.
Right.
But I've never seen a manager guarantee that they're going to win a division. Or if you think about it, LA, the situation they're in, where people were talking just a couple weeks ago about them maybe setting a major league single season win record. And now he's being asked, do you think you're going to win the division? So, I mean, it can all flip around in just a couple of weeks, I guess, is the overarching point I'm struggling to make.
Right. That is so true. It's a bit weird. And yeah, both of those, I mean, the Dodgers and you look at the D-backs, I mean, they are on a complete roll right now. But due to time, Rich, I want to get to the opening of Little Caesars Arena. That ribbon cutting ceremony, it took place earlier this week. It looks like a fabulous venue. I'm not sure if you've gotten a chance to go inside and check it out. But what kind of new life do you think this will breathe into the city of Detroit, downtown Detroit, to be specific?
Well, it's going to be interesting because being a brand new arena, I would expect it's going to sell out every date for the Red Wings, and you've got the Pistons coming down there as well, which was a bit of a surprise, that announcement made about a year ago. And so you're talking not about 41 nights a year where you're going to have a sellout, but double that now. It's going to be over 80 games where you're going to be having crowds in excess of about 20,000 people in that right there in the heart of that district, kitty corner from Comerica Park. It should be terrific. Now, I wasn't at the ribbon cutting on Tuesday, Big Ten teleconference and all the rest of it, but I did tour the place about maybe a month and a half ago. And it looks wonderful. I'm looking forward to seeing it fully functional when the Red Wings start there in the first week in October. But yeah, I mean that's one thing that they've got going for them is that even if the Red Wings aren't a great hockey team this year, and unless Jimmy Howard plays great and avoids injuries, they won't be. But they're still going to sell out because people want to go down and check out the new building. So they're in good shape in that regard for a couple of years. But, yeah, it's going to be very nice, very different, too.
Yeah, I can't wait to check it out. And just, people just going out there alone, maybe not even just to see the Wings or the Pistons, but to check out the new arena. That's going to sell tickets in itself, right, Rich?
Sure, exactly.
Sure. All right, and one final question, Rich, because we have been talking about the unfortunate passing of Judd Heathcote, former MSU men's basketball coach. News broke yesterday that the athletic department at Michigan State will pay tribute to Judd in multiple ways, including the men's basketball team wearing a patch to honor Heathcote throughout the upcoming year. Rich, did you get a chance to meet Judd and to know him at all? I'm curious.
I did. He was my first MSU coach. I was an undergrad when he became the head coach. And then for a couple of years when I was just starting out my career there in Lansing, I covered Michigan State basketball. I got to go to all the home games. So the year that Magic and the crew, you know, won it all. So I wouldn't say I got to know him, you know, on a personal basis, but certainly, you know, post-game pressers and interviews after practice, that sort of thing. And I'll tell you something, and it was the first thing I thought of when he died, was that I never heard him say anything crummy about anybody ever. And you've got guys out there now, Belichick, for example, you were just talking about the New England Patriots, who can't get through a single press of ale without saying something crummy. And then Judd Heathcote went his entire career without doing that. He was funny, obviously smart. And not just, you know, in a basketball sense of smart. And I liked something that Tim Stout tweeted out, and I had forgotten this, but he said that Judd Heathcote thought that he shouldn't be paid more than the highest paid professor at Michigan State. And so he was. I thought that's a great attitude, and I thought he was a remarkable guy. So I was much saddened when I heard that news earlier last week.
A man of character for sure, and so are you, Rich. We thank you for your time this afternoon. I look forward to seeing you again, my man.
Thanks, Al. Maybe Saturday against Western. I'm worried about that game.
I am too. We'll be dissecting that game on tomorrow's show. But yes, I will see you this Saturday. We'll be covering that.
Sounds good, Al. Take care.
All right, the great Richard Kincaid. Let's hit our final break real briefly. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's current sports by inviting Kelly Dean, the president and CEO of Dean Transportation, to Current Sports. He will talk about an effort here in Lansing to help those who are affected by Hurricane Harvey. We'll be right back. Don't hurt me no more. No more. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We have 5 minutes left, and I want to get our final guest on the airwaves to talk about a great campaign as Michigan State's actually their football program. Also, Lansing Mayor Virge Bonero and others have plans to provide relief for Hurricane Harvey victims out in Texas. Now, Bonero's office on Tuesday night announced the launch of a campaign called Lansing Strong for Texas that will provide help to those affected by the hurricane's flooding and related damage. Another man who was a part of that effort is Kelly Dean, president and CEO of Dean Transportation. He now joins us to close out the show. Kelly, how you doing?
I'm doing just great, Al. Thank you so much. Another great show for you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, always great talking to you, Kelly, and it was great running into you this past summer at the Michigan, the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, I should say. Yeah. Now, Kelly, before we get you out of here, I want to talk about Lansing Strong for Texas. How did this come about, and how can our listeners get involved?
Well, thank you, Al. You know, so I'm in the transportation business. I own Dean Transportation and Dean Trailways. I've received a phone call from Mayor Bonero and the wonderful Joan Jackson Johnson asking would I want to be involved with them to send relief to Texas. And so we are loading, stuffing a motor coach with child-type products, the toiletries, et cetera, diapers, all that needed. But most importantly, we're raising dollars to get relief in Texas, in the greater Houston area. And so our plan is to send a bus next week on the 12th. So we have locations all over town, Dean Transportation on Aurelius Road, Myers Lake Lansing, Grace Tabernacle Church in Lansing, Union Missionary Baptist Church, and the Fellowship House of Prayer Baptist Church on Waverly Road. Those are our drop-off locations, and then we're sending all the goods that we collect. We're sending volunteers, going to ride the bus, maybe two buses, and we're just going to do our diligence on behalf of the greater Lansing area, Michigan State, and everyone involved to be able to help make the lives a little bit better in this really critical time for these folks in Houston.
Kelly, that is absolutely fantastic, and I commend you all for this remarkable philanthropic campaign. What's the response been like since it was announced this week? What's been the response from the community, Kelly?
So far it's been very good, and just mounting. The word is getting out, thanks to great folks like you, and we're gonna do our best. You know, we have some experience in that. We went to New Orleans when Katrina hit, and what a tragedy it was. And we ended up bringing back over 150 individuals to Michigan to help get their lives squared around. Many of them ended up staying here in Lansing, never moved back. And, you know, we just think we have wheels. We're in transportation. We're at wheels. We have drivers more than willing to go. And so we're gonna make this effort on behalf of Greater Lansing and maybe change some lives.
That is absolutely fantastic, Kelly. And I'm curious, did you have any family that were down south in the Houston area or in Texas that you were worried about during that hurricane?
Yes. And fortunately, everyone is okay.
Good.
On my personal list, but we've got phone calls from several that, in fact, we have a family that we're going to bring back from the Houston area, coming back to their family here in the Lansing area. So we know before we're done, there's going to be quite a few that we're going to help at this time to get them back and forth to kind of get settled in after their tragedy.
That is fantastic stuff. All right, Kelly, can you just kind of pub Lansing Strong for Texas and let our listeners know how they can get involved?
Well, Lansing, the best way, if you'd like, and what's needed is dollars. If you make a contribution, we're recommending going to the Red Cross, the American Red Cross, very secured site, and make a contribution. That will do the best. But we're looking to transport on our Dean Trailways motor coach cleaning supplies, toiletries, diapers, and so infant kind of needs that we know are in big need there. And they can drop them off at Dean. They can drop them off at the Lake Lansing Myers. We have a school bus there full time that will be able to drop off. And so they're just ways. And I know the Red Cross needs volunteers. So if anybody's interested, just contact our Red Cross here in Lansing.
Kelly Dean, President and CEO of Dean Transportation. Kelly, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, my man.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thanks for getting the word out. We can make a difference.
That's so true. And my family, as I mentioned, Isaac, down in Florida is Hurricane Irma. And I know two other hurricanes have now developed out of nowhere now. My family is traveling from Florida right now. My mother, my stepfather, and my little sister, they will be staying with me in Lansing. So be safe out there, folks. All right. Much thanks to Kelly Dean, Richard Kincaid, and all of our listeners out there. Same time, same place tomorrow. Take care. And as always, be easy, people.